I'm Donald Roberge. Concordia University is setting in motion a plan to decolonize and indigenize its curriculum and its teaching methods. The five-year plan will focus on adjusting and including histories, approaches, and indigenous voices throughout the university. In 2019, Concordia had released an action plan that would integrate and recognize Indigenous ways of knowing, and the initiation of the five-year strategy is considered an important step in the fulfillment of the university's original commitment. Among the school's goals will be the implementation of concrete actions that will offer both Indigenous perspectives and training to help faculty teach and facilitate Indigenous subject matter while challenging Eurocentric ways of thinking. An open letter signed by more than 300 actors and filmmakers is asking the Toronto International Film Festival to sever its ties to one of its main sponsors, the Royal Bank of Canada, due to its support of the fossil fuel industry. Signed by such stars as Mark Ruffalo, Rachel McAdams, and Joaquin Phoenix, the letter to TIFF CEO Cameron Bailey asked the festival to drop their longtime sponsor for funding destructive projects on Indigenous lands and BIPOC communities. Since the Paris Climate Agreement of 2015, the five major Canadian banks have all increased their financing of fossil fuel projects, with the Royal Bank of Canada being the largest funder in the world for the industry last year. In response to the letter, the RBC reaffirmed its commitment to helping reduce carbon emissions by 2050 in accordance with the targets established by the Paris Agreement. Vélo Fantôme Montréal, or Ghost Bike Montreal, is marking its 10-year anniversary by going province-wide. Known for installing white bicycles in memory of cyclists who have been fatally struck, the organization will now be known as Souliers et Vélos Fantômes Québec, or Ghost Shoes and Bikes Québec. With the creation of a socio-financing campaign and funding from the Caisse des Jardins, the group intends to create memorials throughout the province in honor of pedestrians and cyclists who have died in traffic-related incidences. Since 2013, more than 20 white bicycles have been installed in the Greater Montreal area, while over 645 pedestrians have been killed in the province due to road violence.
Good morning, Montreal. It is 9:02 a.m. You are listening to The Get Up with your host, Leora Schertzer. And in the studio today with us, we've got new host, Julia Israel. What's up, Julia? How's it going?
Hey, what's up? Good.
Shana Tova to all my Jewish brothers and sisters out there, in case you did not know. It is the eve of the Jewish New Year tonight. And I don't know about you, Julia, but this time, to me, feels way more appropriate for a time of renewal than the dead of winter.
I have to agree with you.
And I've actually remarked this to my grandpa before, and he taught me that the Gregorian New Year used to actually happen in March. And I've got a little bit of information, history about our Gregorian calendar.
Let's hear it.
The modern calendar was created during the Roman Republic, around 500 BC, and it used to be a lunar calendar as well that was only 10 months long, which is why, you know, September was the 7th month, October was the 8th month, December the 10th, hence the Latin numbering system. But since the calendar regularly fell out of sync from relying on the moon, they decided to change things up. So January was added in the time of Julius Caesar around 45 BC, but Romans had superstitions around uneven numbers, so they added a 12th month. And in the 16th century, Pope Gregory adjusted the calendar to more accurately reflect the time it takes for the Earth to travel around the sun. So there is a little bit of history for you about our inappropriate New Year's.
I have a question for you, Leora.
Uh-huh.
What New Year makes the most sense for you? Do you kind of abide by the January 1st New Year?
I feel like for non-Jewish people, this, like, the mark of the beginning of the school year also feels like, I don't know, the beginning of the year. I'm going to go with the Jewish New Year.
Nice.
September, October. We are going to get into a bit of traffic. Julia, do you have info on that?
Yeah, for sure. So this morning we're seeing lots of traffic on DeCary, like usual, both directions on the 1540 this morning. It's also looking slow in Cavendish and Sherbrooke as well, so plan your route carefully.
Okay, thanks, Julia. And by any chance, do you also have the weather?
I got the weather.
Awesome. Let's hear it.
For those of us who are awake, it's a little chilly this morning. It's about 12 degrees, but this afternoon's going to warm up, and so will the weekend, with highs of 21, 22, So it'll be a fun one.
It's also very sunny, but don't let the sun deceive you. Bring a sweater, bring a jacket. And we've got a news headline. We got a couple news headlines. The Quebec movie and TV industry has risen in value by 25% during the 2021-2022 year, according to a new report from the Institut de la Statistique du Québec. The audiovisual industry in Quebec reached $2.8 billion, which is a historic high for the province, compared to $2.2 billion in the previous year. But keep in mind that this data reflects the period before Xavier Dolan's retirement and the Hollywood writers' strike, but go Quebec. And Julie, do you have a headline for us?
Yeah, for sure. Yesterday, the Ministry of Health and Social Services released a new report about homelessness, talking about the numbers that we see in Quebec. They found 10,000 people experiencing homelessness in Quebec, and 60% of which reside in Montreal. And this was they've seen a 44% increase over those 5 years since the last report was done. But talking to people on the ground who work in this area, people are not surprised. So there's been a lot of mixed reviews about what we should do about this report and if this, you know, is really news.
Okay, thanks, Julia. Also, later on the show, with us in the studio today, we've got CanLit sensation Eva Crocker here with us to talk about her newest book, Back to the Land of the Living. Some know her as the Old Evester. That might be self-titled. How's it going, Eva?
Great. Thank you so much for having me here, Leora.
Yeah, I'm so pumped that you're here. Before we get to that, we're going to play some music, and we will be with you after the break. It is 9:07 a.m. You're listening to The Get Up on CJLO 1690 a.m.
Thank you. Laurence Anne unveils Oni Romancy, a dreamy and intimate third album on which she explores the different facets of the nocturnal world, dreams, and imagination, thus expanding the mysterious aura that surrounds her. Pushing further the groundwork established on her previous releases, this new album proves to be denser and darker, while remaining faithful to Laurence Anne's conceptual and immersive universe through a combination of dream pop, art pop, and synth pop, distinct to her usual landscapes. Be sure to catch Laurence Anne's release show on Thursday, September 28th at La Salle Rosa as part of Pop Montreal 2023. Tickets available now at popmontreal.com and bonsound.com. Oni Romancy is out September 8th on LP, CD, and all streaming platforms.
Ashes to Ashes is your home for modern pop in all of its forms, whether it be synth pop, hyper pop, ambient pop, or anything else ending in pop. Along with Bops, the show features interviews and performances from an always growing list of emerging and established pop artists from both the local Montreal music scene and abroad. So tune in at 7 p.m. every Tuesday on CJLO 1690 AM and CJLO.com.
Thank you.
It is 9:20 a.m. in Montreal. You are listening to The Get Up on CJLO 1690 a.m. I'm your host, Leora. In the studio with us today, we have Eva Crocker. Eva is a multiple award-winning author based in Montreal and raised in Newfoundland. She has also published a short story collection called Barreling Forward and another novel called All I Ask. But today we're here to talk about her new book, Back to the Land of the Living. She writes fun, sexy, queer fiction, and she also happens to be kind of a writing mentor to me and a very, very dear friend of mine. Eva, thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah.
And for the kind words.
Of course. Merits no less. Let's get into it. First and foremost, what's your book all about, the new one?
It's kind of a coming of age story. It's about a young woman who moves from Newfoundland to Montreal and kind of about finding your footing in a new place, what it's like to move from somewhere small to somewhere big, especially as a queer person. And then really about like Montreal specifically and what it feels like to arrive there. And just kind of like messy early 20s stuff that beginning to sort yourself out of that.
that narrative, queer woman moving from Newfoundland to Montreal, sounds a lot like someone I know. Could be.
No one I
know. How much of this book is true? Like, would you say it's totally autobiographical or is it kind of?
No, it's definitely not autobiographical. But like the question of like how much of it is true is an interesting question about any work of fiction, you know. So hopefully it feels true.
Right. Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah, I totally resonated with a lot of what was happening.
What is the truth? You know, that's what I'm saying.
Deep stuff to think about at 9:22 a.m. Mm-hmm. I know Barreling Forward was a short story collection. Was your other book, that was a novel or was it a short story collection as well?
That was a novel, yeah.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So this is not your first full-length novel.
No, but it's interesting how different the process is after having done it one time. Like, it mm-hmm. still feels like a totally different journey to write a long piece.
Yeah, could you talk a little bit about, I guess, the differences in, because I know you write a lot of short fiction on your own time. What's the difference in the process, I guess?
I think their short stories are, obviously, you've got a smaller kind of container to pack a whole world into. But I think that the biggest difference is that they kind of turn around like a smaller moment and you have to imbue that moment with a lot of significance, whereas in a novel there's a whole large story that's unfolding, and there can be many significant moments, but there also, I think generally there has to be some kind of like big crisis or something to negotiate instead of finding meaning in the kind of moments that might feel insignificant in a bigger story.
Do you feel like you had to like somehow keep track of all your characters on, like, I don't know, spreadsheet or something, like, and what was happening, or like following the narrative from the beginning to the end?
I don't use a spreadsheet. I know lots of people who do something like that, or like flashcards that you move around. I definitely have like a couple different notebooks with different like plot, characters, that kind of thing, especially towards the end of the process. There's like a lot of note taking and making sure that things line up, stuff like that. But yeah, it's mostly just journaling for me.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Noted for future writing. Back to the Land of the Living. That's quite the title. How did you come up with that?
I think for me it kind of resonates a bunch of different ways with this story. So there is a little bit about COVID at the end of the book and lockdown, but loneliness and isolation and the kind of push and pull between that and feeling connected to people is a theme throughout the whole book. So those are kind of two separate lands. And then there's also Newfoundland, where the character feels like a really particular kind of connection to people, but also suffocated in some way. And then Montreal feels really big and exciting and sexy and fun. But then also lonely at times. So those are two kind of different lands of the living. And the character also ends up in this sort of controlling relationship, which is also fulfilling in a lot of ways, in kind of like learning about herself and her queerness. And those are also two separate lands, but the before and after of that. So that's a little bit how I've been thinking about the title.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And you talked a little bit about like COVID, I guess, being whatever the backdrop, but what was the inspiration for this book and how did you choose this story to be a full-length novel?
My writing has always been like very much about place. And so my other two books are about Newfoundland. And I was kind of interested in those books in the sort of like political and socioeconomic situation there, and how it kind of impacts people's interpersonal lives and their like relationships to institutions. There's like a really intensely fluctuating economy there because of resource extraction. So I've interested in place, and then having left Newfoundland, I was like, oh no, what is this going to mean for my writing? And I guess in this book, I was just trying to capture that feeling of arriving in Montreal for me, to some degree, or someone like me.
Right, sure. And I did also, I don't know, I totally loved, Montreal is such a fun setting for a book, and I loved all your descriptions of people's clothing or like the greasy food, and I don't know, the kind of it kind of has this grunge essence that I think a lot of people really relate to. I know it's not totally autobiographical, but I guess like some of the scenarios or situations were based on like real people in your life. So what have your, I guess, ex-lovers, roommates, friends, what have they said, or other people who were featured, what have they said about the book?
I mean, there's no like one-to-one correlation between real people.
Right.
I think, you know, I don't know if this is true for all writers, but I think any kind of inspiration is like often an amalgamation of people, the way
yes.
you have a dream and somebody is like your mom and also your roommate or whatever are somehow suddenly the same person with a totally different appearance. So definitely there's a little bit of that going on. Like you
totally.
Can't invent out of the void. But yeah, all the people, I'm lucky that everybody close to me has been super supportive. And yeah, I feel super lucky for that.
Love to hear it. That's awesome.
Yeah.
You have a lot in the book about the queer experience during COVID.
TM.
Do you think there was anything particular about like being queer in COVID?
That's interesting.
It'd be a tough question, but.
Well, I went back to school in 2020, so it was like all on Zoom. And I was TAing this really great course that Karen Herland teaches about the AIDS epidemic. It's like an interdisciplinary course. And many people wrote papers about exactly that, like the experience of being queer in COVID and being kind of separated from community, and especially for young people, sometimes having to go back to families who were hostile to them or who didn't understand their identity. So I think there is a lot to say about that, and it's not exactly what this book is about, but I think it is a super interesting topic. I didn't really like set out to write about COVID. I was
right.
writing this story and then it happened, and I think it then felt strange to not
for sure
acknowledge it.
Yeah, I'm interested to see how much like COVID literature, movies are going to come out because it was pretty big part of our lives very recently. Did writing this book impact or transform your relationship to either Montreal or to St. John's at all?
That's interesting. I guess I did think a lot about like the things that I love about each place and the things that feel less like comfortable. And I think also like I was really trying to get back to that feeling of arriving in a new place as a younger person than I am.
Right.
So I think my relationship to Montreal has changed a lot since the kind of like experience that I'm depicting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does a little bit. And I was impressed also by like your memory for the feeling in that moment, like in the past. I was like, oh wow, you're capturing something that feels so distant, but it's so visceral to like, I don't know, I remember arriving in Montreal and falling in love with it, and you get used to it and it gets old and you forget about that feeling, but you're kind of reminded also when you have people visiting from out of town and they're like, oh wow, the staircases. I don't know.
True. Yeah.
What was it like growing up? This is a bit of a pivoting question. What was it like growing up queer in Newfoundland?
I think there's so many different experiences of it, of course. I can only speak to my own experience, and I'm really lucky to have like some really incredible family members who are really supportive of me. I'm thinking about my aunt, who's like very cool lesbian in like her 60s, who has like a whole crew of lesbians and live in this tiny town and just like drive around on their quads. And because of that, I felt like really, to use a cringy phrase, empowered to feel okay about expressing my identity. But cool. I think people have a really wide array of experiences, and that's not everyone's.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But that does, that's definitely something, yeah, that stands out, the ATVs. would you be willing to read a little passage for us today?
Do you have
maybe a favorite, or I don't know, whatever comes to you.
Okay, well, I'm going to be honest with the listeners that Lior actually suggested a passage to me when I arrived, which I was really grateful for, because I haven't read from this book yet, and I have.
Oh, really? You haven't read the physical copy?
I haven't read aloud, like, to other people.
Oh, sure.
I have the launch coming up on Wednesday, and I have to pick something to read, and I've been, like, putting it off because it feels like a scary thing. So right. I was very grateful to have this passage selected or suggested.
Cool.
You're like, just do it.
No, drag it out, please.
Okay.
We got 30 minutes.
Okay. Here it goes. What she knew about Montreal was mostly from a trip she'd taken in the 7th grade. When she was 12, Marcy's best friend was Taylor Lawler. Marcy and Taylor were transitioning from spending their evenings dunking Barbie dolls in a Tupperware hot tub to three-way calling boys they'd met at the Avalon Mall. They were obsessed with a coffee table book about the Love Parade Festival in Berlin. It was a collection of glossy, full-page photographs of ravers dancing in the street. There were feather boas and silver bikinis and rainbow tube socks and pacifier necklaces. The girls would take Taylor's CD player to the front step and play badminton in her gravel driveway. Taylor had a zippered circular pouch for her CDs, and they would flip through the clear plastic sleeves looking for just the right one. Aqua and Prozac were falling out of rotation, replaced by No Doubt and Sublime, and then Crass and Cox Bar and X-Ray Specs. Around this time, Taylor's mom invited Marcy to go on a road trip to the mainland. Taylor's mom had family in Ontario. They went every summer and came back with the type of clothes you couldn't get in Newfoundland. A pale blue silk mini skirt with an intricate pattern embroidered on it. A Buzzcocks t-shirt with Ever Fallen in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have in bright red cursive on the back. A pair of purple velvet platform sneakers. Marcy had begged to try those on, but her feet were too big. She tried scrunching her toes, but her heels still stuck out the back. She could have walked them in them like that, but she was afraid of damaging a precious artifact from the mainland. Marcy's mom said, "You know, 2 weeks is a long time to be away from home, longer than you've ever been away from us." On the day they left for the mainland, they drove across the island for an entire day before boarding the overnight ferry in Port au Basque. Taylor's mom bought them Jell-O parfait from the cooler in the cafeteria at 10 o'clock at night. They wandered the ship after Taylor's mom fell asleep, sitting up in a plastic chair, her mouth hanging open. The next day they drove again across Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. Taylor's mom played every tape they requested and stopped every time they needed to pee. Marcy crouched on the shoulder, bracing herself against the dusty door, terrified and exhilarated by wind coming off the cars speeding past. Warm pee soaked her sock. In the back seat, the girls purposely burned each other with the sun-heated, shiny part of the middle seat belt and shrieked. They bickered over quizzes and magazines. They sang all the words to the rancid, self-titled album twice in a row. Marcy's mother would have been threatening to leave them on the side of the road. Maybe I'll skip this little bit. Yeah, maybe that's a good place to leave it, do you think?
Okay, that was wonderful. Thank you so much. loved your reading voice as well.
Thanks.
Eva, you're also a writing instructor and run writing workshops. Do you have any workshops coming up by any chance?
Yeah, I have a few coming up that are full right now, okay. But I think I'm going to do another one in October.
Dope.
I think the best way to find out about it is my Facebook page, probably.
And what's that?
It's just my name, Eva Crocker.
Eva mm-hmm. Crocker. Cool. Mm-hmm. And sorry, can you talk a little bit about what goes down in the writing workshops?
Sure. So the workshop's called Fundamentals of Short Fiction, and it's a month-long workshop once a week for 2 hours in the evening usually. And each week we kind of focus on a different element of short fiction. Closer?
Yeah.
So it'll be dialogue, descriptive writing, for example. And we have a quick chat about that at the beginning. And everyone brings a piece of their own work to kind of read aloud and discuss, and try to make it an environment that's kind of like welcoming and open to experimentation and works in progress. So ideally not at all intimidating.
Yes. Yeah. And full disclosure, I've done this writing workshop, super effective. It is the reason that I've gotten into fiction writing. Gotten back into it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, very, very helpful. And you've got a book launch coming up mm-hmm. next week at Drawn and Quarterly on September 20th. What are the details? I guess that was the main
thing. those are the most of the details. It's a double launch. So Heather Nolan is also launching her book, How to Be Alone, which is a really beautiful book, also about Montreal. Very like moving, funny, lots of sexy stuff in there too, if you're into that. And it's at 7 p.m. on Wednesday at Drawn and Quarterly. There'll be refreshments.
Awesome. That's Drawn and Quarterly, the bookstore on Bernard in the Mile End. Mm-hmm. Eva, it has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for coming in, biking with me all the way through NDG and Villeray. And yeah, it's been really, really enlightening and wonderful to hear more about you and your process and your writing.
Cool. Thank you so much for the bike ride and the thoughtful questions.
We're going to transition to a couple songs. I forgot to mention this earlier, but if you have been with us the whole show, the songs we listened to earlier were Serpent by La Sécurité and Heartbeat by Chris and Cozy. And coming up, we're going to listen to Dead Lines by Skinny Puppy and The Snow by Coil. It is 9:39 a.m. in Montreal. You are listening to The Get Up on CJLO 1690 a.m.
Population Du are back with Electron Libre du Québec, their sophomore album showcasing once again their sharp sense of songcraft and an undeniable expertise in their instruments. Effortlessly maintaining a balance between challenging compositions and instantly memorable melodies, Electron Libre du Québec delivers a heavy psychedelic rock with feverish funk rhythms, flowing free with a hint of jazz philosophy, a burst of early punk energy, and a love of minor scales that harkens back to the roots of heavy metal. Population 2's release show will take place on Thursday, October 5th at La Sala Rosa. Tickets are available now at bonsound.com and casadelpoplo.com. Electron Libre du Québec is out October 6th on LP and all streaming platforms.
One, two, three, four, five, six!
All good beginnings. Need some variation. Tune into REVC with me, Maxwell. It's something different every week. Every Thursday at 3 on CJLO 1690 AM.
It is 15 degrees in Montreal. The temperature has risen 3 degrees since we last talked about it 30 minutes ago. It is 9:54 a.m. You are listening to The Get Up on CJLO 1690 a.m. Shout out to Destiny, Eva's girlfriend, who sent in a little bit of feedback on this morning's program. She said, "Your radio presence is a charming combo of nervous and cocky." It is 9:54 a.m. We just listened to Deadlines by Skinny Puppy and The Snow by Coil. And we're going to close out the show with a couple more songs. New Kind of Love by Packrat and 15 to Infinity by Fiddlehead.